All right, let's just talk about herd immunity, because there's been a lot of conversations around reaching herd immunity. I know the president doesn't even like the term herd immunity. Not that that's relevant right now. We know what the concept is. Yesterday, there were a couple of articles suggesting that maybe South Africa wouldn't be reaching herd immunity. Let's just try and unpack this. What is it? Is it important? And what is it that we're actually talking about here?
Yeah, so I think that's why we're really focusing on the vaccines and actually rolling out it as fast and as widely as possible, because by vaccinating as many people as possible, and there are critical limits for what this herd immunity should be, we are then able to manage further transmission. So it's our working our way out of this particular pandemic. So the levels of vaccination that needs to be reached can vary. I know that the current level that is set for South Africa is about 67%. But if you think about measles, which is even more transmissible than this particular virus, you actually have to go to 95%. And in fact, you have to have at least that for at least two doses of the measles vaccine. So it's a matter of managing your pandemic as by vaccinating as many people as possible. In other words, having them as immune as possible against further infections and transmission of the virus.
So how realistic is South Africa, is it that South Africa might achieve herd immunity?
Yes, so it's quite interesting, you know, the conversations that have developed over the last few months. I think initially we really did focus around herd immunity as being the objective, but based, I think, on some of the ideas around whether or not we will be able to reach those targets of, let's say, 67% of the adult population being vaccinated, we may reach a particular level of immunity where the virus becomes, if you like, endemic. In other words, there'll be pockets of circulation and further transmission, but we won't necessarily manage to eliminate the virus. So at that level, it will be in circulation, but not to the extent that it will affect our hospital systems, overwhelm our systems. The mortality will decline, morbidity, mortality may decline as well under those particular circumstances. But I think it's still worth pursuing and trying to reach as high a level of immunity as we can in order to really try and ensure that if there is endemicity of this particular virus, that it will be at a low level. As you know, we have influenza each particular season, except for last year, maybe this season, and we don't vaccinate to that extent. And those vaccines are not as effective as, for example, the ones around SARS-CoV-2. So there we certainly do have, if you like, outbreaks each year of influenza. So we may have a similar scenario if we don't reach so-called herd immunity. Mm.
What also is fascinating to me is, and I was chatting to my one son who lives in Israel, and he was saying last night that COVID is basically non-existent there. They don't have to wear masks. There isn't, it's not part of their consciousness anymore. But right, it's very, very difficult to enter the country. So it's almost a fiction. They've created a bubble. What happens, what happens should they open their borders? They've got herd immunity at this point, I would imagine. But now a country, and it doesn't matter Israel or anywhere else, it's just the theory. What happens when those borders open and you have people traveling from other countries? Do you lose herd immunity?
Not necessarily. I think it depends on how you manage the entry of travelers into the country. So that would entail for example, having some screening processes. I know that some countries have instituted an enforced isolation, quarantine for at least 2 weeks. But again, it may not always be difficult. It may not always be easy to manage that. So you may still have some low levels of infection entering into your country or individuals who are infected. But if you are able to do your correct chasing and tracking immediately and isolation, then I think you're well able to manage that. And if you have achieved high levels of immunity in your community, then that will certainly be a big plus in terms of not having spread in the country. Of course, there's always that concern around variants. That certainly pops up now and then. So again, if the vaccines and herd immunity is not matched against the variants, then of course you can have far wider spread in communities, yes.
Mm. And in terms of our own vaccine rollout, you know, obviously it's not going particularly swimmingly. We have vaccinated just over a million people. Well, I don't know how else to put it. I'm trying to be as polite.
Yes. So
I'm trying to be as polite as possible.
Sure. So I think and I know I'm not trying to spin, but I think what is one of the positives from this is the hope that I think the fair majority of healthcare workers have been vaccinated in these two rounds so far. I know there's supposed to be 1.2 million healthcare workers. I know that we've not reached that particular number, but I'm hoping that a fair proportion would have been vaccinated, and that would certainly, especially in an area like Gauteng, where as you see the inflection point and the rise, you know, the healthcare service is vulnerable and the healthcare workers are a vulnerable group, that they are actually protected, and that may be an important positive in terms of the vaccination strategy. And also, as you know, we experience a fairly significant second wave. And I think the thoughts are that we may not experience the same extent of those waves. And there is reason, one of the reasons for that may well be that there is an approach to a high level of approaching herd immunity, or at least some level of community immunity that will be protective, actually. Yeah. So we may not see the same extent or the numbers as we did in the second wave.
There's also been a lot of comment from the MSC that the current regulations, given the fact that we're in the third wave, are not stringent enough. Do you have a view on that?
Which regulations? Apologies.
The government regulations that we're on an adjusted level two.
Yes, I think it's very difficult. You know, I think we've never reached the point where we've introduced these levels of control, which has really resulted in an R naught below or an RE below one necessarily. I think it's been really difficult for us to do that. So I think this is a strategy to have an adjusted level two, but I think we may have to look at each particular province, particular area, and determine whether or not more significant levels or readjustments need to be made, and determine whether or not that's going to have any effect. So I think it's still comes back to the fact that, you know, the usual trope about the non-pharmaceutical interventions and reiterating those as best is possible to try and really try and limit transmission as best as possible. Mm, yes. Mm.
And that is the reality. We really don't have, at this stage, that is our best defense, are the non-pharmaceutical measures, the staying home, wearing your masks, don't go out unless you need to, and let's just wait for this. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic last year, when I chatted to somebody in Italy, in Venice, a friend of mine, and her advice was incredible. We hadn't yet felt this. We hadn't even hit our first wave yet. And she said, the best advice I could give you is just stand still. Just stand still. And I keep thinking of that, because as we've hit this third wave now, I said to my family as well yesterday, just stand still. Don't make arrangements. Don't go running around. Yes. Just stand as still as you can, and let's just wait for this wave to pass. And I think those were wise words from people in Italy who were dealing with it in the most tremendously negative and difficult way.
Yes. Absolutely. I think, the further your distances are, the better for you.